Welcome into Brewcast for Amazing Brew on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am Luke Giardi, joined as always by Anthony Broom and Chris Castellani, here with you on Monday night, April 5th, headed into Tuesday, April 6th. And for the next hour, we're going to show images of sad puppies and play in terms of it by Sarah McLachlan, because we're all sad here on the show. No, I'm kidding, but we do have to do a bit of a eulogy to the Michigan basketball season, and quite a season, quite a run that it was. Unfortunately, came to an end last Tuesday night in the Elite Eight. But are you guys doing okay? You know, how are you all doing? You know, it feels good up here. It was like 70 degrees in the UP today, so nothing really can bring me down. How are you guys doing?
I was doing better before it took us like a half hour to get on here. a little inside baseball. Yeah. Sometimes technology doesn't always work correctly, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the further you get from that loss that we'll talk about, I still haven't totally processed it. It gets easier to process and also more inexplicable the further we get away from it. But overall, the weather's fine. Pollen people, our asses are getting kicked this year so far. Allergy stuff is off the charts. So you have a friend in me if you're suffering through all that. But it's good to be back with the two of you. Back to, I don't know, now we're back into the void of nothingness until God knows when. So here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to make the promise that I wasn't going to cry on this week's podcast like I did last week if you were watching on Twitter, but I don't know. The more we talk about last week's game, maybe some tears will flow. I don't know. I mean, look, it's been a week, a stressful week. It stings. Still stings. I haven't talked about it much since we did the post-game locker room, Anthony. I haven't really talked about it much because, yeah, Steven was like, hey, do you want to help do one of the breakdowns for the highlights? And initially I'm like, yeah, but I just said, this stuff is too emotional for me, man. I can't do it. So, it was a very difficult, loss. And at some point over the next few weeks, I think I'll take that step back and be like, man, what an amazing run. What an amazing season. I'm not there yet. It still hurts.
Not on Monday night of the national title game. And I'll say the only time I've talked about it is when I've run into people or spoke with people who are like, so what happened to your boys the other night? 41 points? Are you kidding me, bro? Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah.
Also, if you're on Twitch, we can't see Luke right now. So he's just kind of the voice.
That's actually just my new face.
He's the voice from on high. All that good stuff, keeping in line with the Easter season here. But yeah, we'll talk about it and put a bow on this season as a whole and talk about maybe what comes next.
Let me ask you guys this, man. Saturday night, UCLA Gonzaga, does that game make it easier to swallow the Tuesday night loss, knowing the capabilities of UCLA? Does it make it harder knowing that Michigan, with UCLA sticking with Gonzaga and the way Michigan played one of their worst games of the season, losing by two to UCLA, does it make it harder knowing that Michigan, theoretically could have hung with Gonzaga? I know we don't like to use the transitive property in sports, but that's all we can go off of right now. Or is it about the same?
I'll speak for me and say that it was a little bit easier. It was a little bit easier to swallow after watching how they played. Because for the most part, I guess VCU had an all right showing, but usually double-digit seeds, they have that amazing first two weekends, but once they get to the Final Four, they get popped. Like George Mason got killed. There's a couple other examples I can't think of right now, but I know they don't fare well once they get to that third weekend. I was able to watch a majority of the second half and be like, okay, some of the problems that plagued Michigan are not exclusive to just that game. Like Johnny Juzang is legitimately good. That team is a tough team. They are well coached. They don't beat themselves a lot, or at least haven't in this tournament. And even though they beat us, I did find myself rooting for them. And I think that's credit to the job Nick Cronin's done there. And I don't know, it would have been an amazing story, but yeah, soften the blow just a little bit knowing that, yeah, this is still a team that was a team that did deserve to be there. It wasn't a fluke run. They beat some powerhouse teams just to get to the Final Four and played a perfect game on Saturday and ended up losing.
Yes and no, to sit on the fence on it. I mean, yes, in that the last 6 or 7 minutes of the game that I watched were massively entertaining. Yeah. No, in that I did not plan on watching basketball on Saturday. I didn't watch the first game. Same. I didn't see most of the second game. I attempted to have a social life and go out and do things after being in kind of a basketball bunker for the last several weeks. That's not a flex or anything. I said it was an attempt. I didn't say it was successful, but that last 6 or 7 minutes, I mean, for Jalen Suggs alone, was worth the price of admission. I think I tuned in around the time where he had I think it was a block at the basket, and then he saves the ball from going out of bounds, and then, you know, makes a nice little pass in transition for a bucket. That guy's insane. And as someone who is a Detroit Pistons fan, Old English to here, you know, Red Wings here, it's all on video. I can't run from that. But someone who's like watching these games now to see, okay, who's an NBA guy, who's a star. Jalen Suggs is a star. He's fun to watch, and he's, again, worth the price of admission alone in what will be. I mean, this was kind of my fear, right? I talked about this, I feel like even a month ago or before that, where it was just going to be like every other bubble sport that we've seen, where the best two teams or the best team winds up winning it all. And I have no reason to believe, again, this, I don't think this will be out before the title game is over. I would expect Gonzaga wins, but you know, the best two teams, the game that people wanted to see all year is the game we're getting on Monday night. So it's, I don't know, there's just kind of still an empty feeling there from how it ended for Michigan and all that stuff too. So I don't know. It's fun. I think people have been kind of crapping on the men's tournament. The women's tournament was great. A lot of those games were massively entertaining, but I feel like the men's tournament gave us the first weekend chaos. It gave us some really good games in the second weekend. And, you know, there's always on the Final Four, it always seems like there's one that's kind of out of hand. And there's the one that's talked about as maybe the best game of the year, if not one of the best games ever played. And this year was no different. So shout out to Gonzaga and Baylor. You know, people are kind of dogging the Zags, but you know, it'd be cool to see a team that hasn't won it before potentially win it, or win it if this is out after that game is over. good looks.
That's what I mean. I've replayed the looks in my head a lot. Like I feel like I played in the damn game. I've been replaying in my head so much, you know? And it's like Hunter Dickinson had a great move, missed a bunny. The Franz airball 3, the ball came right down into Eli Brooks's hands and he could have had an easy layup. I think he panicked a little bit to put up that reverse. Mike Smith had one at the rim too, made a great move, got there, left it a little bit short. And I don't know, I saw people criticizing the play with 0.5 seconds to go. You can't criticize that. There's nothing you can do there.
That's a fine look. I mean,
that was as good of a look as I could have ever wanted with 0.5 seconds to go with it out of bounds on the baseline. It was Michigan had their chances. Michigan should have won that damn game. They should have been playing in the Final Four. And I don't know what happened, man. I feel like UCLA's run, like they had some voodoo going or something. Because Michigan, well, I think they were the best free throw shooting team in the Big Ten this year, at least top two. And they missed free throws. Same with Alabama. So there was something weird going on, you know? I don't know. I haven't really been able to get over it.
That Bill Walton cloud of
weed smoke,
whatever it is, yeah. Magic, if it's pot, if it's just everyone just gets so high they can't hit free. I don't know what it is. Yeah. It makes no sense to me.
It's in the upper tier of toughest sports losses I've ever had. It's in no particular order. There's the cream of the crop, which is trouble with the snap, and the 2013 ALCS, and you could throw 16 and 18 Ohio State football in there too. And then right, you know, probably in rounding out that top five is that one. It wasn't even, cause again, it was more the circumstances surrounding the year that made it more heartbreaking. Like, this team was a great team and people are going to remember them as a great team, but I just, I wanted that one. And I wasn't feeling great coming into it, and I didn't want to be that guy because I'm the most anxious person most of you will probably ever know. So it's like, I didn't want to be the guy who's like, man, I'm nervous. But I, even last week, like when we talked on here, I knew the possibility was there. Cause I hate when people act like, and that you guys didn't do this, but I'm just saying in general, I hate when people act like it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to win, cause they usually end up losing. They played offensively. They played a poor game. Defensively, I thought they were great. Juzang threw in some tough shots. Happens. They allowed 51 points. If you would have told me Michigan's allowing 51 points, I'd have thought they would have run UCLA out of the gym. What it came down to is, one, and I said this from the beginning, at some point, the liver's injury was going to catch up to him. And you can't tell me that when they were bleeding there in the last couple minutes of the game, Isaiah, number two would have been a great guy to have taken a few shots there. And he wasn't out on the floor, and that's heartbreaking. And Franz Wagner played arguably his worst game as a Wolverine. You just got to call it for what it is. He played a very poor game. He was nervous. The player that we saw early this season, who didn't seem particularly confident in his offensive abilities, showed up. And I'm sure he feels a lot of pain. I'm sure he's hurting. I don't want to rip too much into him because he's a wonderful player and he did good things for this program. But it was a vicious cycle of awful. And really, for the first time all year, maybe the Illinois game being the other exception, it seemed like everyone on the floor was looking for who was going to be the guy on offense. And outside of Dickinson early in the second half, no one really stepped up. And you feel like it could have been Livers, but he wasn't out there. Brutal. And just a flat line of a game. They played poorly.
Well, I'll say this too. And this, Chris, you and I went on a locker room after the game at, like, God, it must have been, 1:30 in the morning, whatever it was. The thing that is most disappointing to me, and this will – I can see the negative iTunes review in my head right now. Oh, Anthony's too – he talks too much, whatever. That. I don't care. I have a microphone and you don't. But the thing that bothers me, and it's – I'm not saying it's a long-term concern. I'm not saying that this is a program full of chokers or anything like that. So let me preface it by saying this. What bothers me the most about that game, and Chris, you just brought up the Illinois game, similar in that in the two games this year where you had a chance to hang a banner, you had three. You won a Big Ten title against Michigan State a couple nights later, but against Illinois and against UCLA were your two biggest dud efforts of the year with a chance to hang a banner. And that bothers me a little bit because the Illinois game was a game where the team was just totally checked out, deer in the headlights from the start. And that's a problem in itself, but they didn't have Io Dosunmu. It just seemed like the opportunity to make some kind of statement was there, and they didn't handle their business. And against UCLA, they played hard. I'll give them that, but they just couldn't find, there's a lid over the basket and the free throws. There was just, somewhere there was just a lack of focus and these are human guys. So I'm sure when they see that Alabama loses, there is a little bit of a relief there. Yeah. You know, maybe Alabama losing that game, or maybe Alabama wins that game, Michigan's a little more locked in. Again, I wasn't in the locker room. I'm not accusing those guys of not playing hard, but it bothers me that, in, like I said, in your two most important games of the year, and, you know, the Illinois one, again, comes with the asterisk of, oh, you still won a Big Ten title a couple nights later. They came on days where, again, biggest stage you could possibly be on, first chance to hang a banner. They were lucky. They got a chance to go out and get that banner still when they lost to Illinois. The final or the Elite Eight doesn't provide that opportunity. So the fact that they came out and just played that poorly. And again, I think Isaiah Livers, like, what was the thing we talked about all year? It seems virtually impossible for every single guy on the roster to have an off night at once. You know, you throw Isaiah Livers in the mix, yeah, it probably helps your chances a lot. You probably win that game. You might be playing on Monday night. Who knows? But it just seems like the chances, like, it's one more variable, one more guy who hits a shot or two here or there, you win the game. And that's, you know, for as much, it's really interesting. You see it now. I mean, in the totality of what this tournament has been, UCLA responded to that 50, because that wasn't a good game for them either. They respond to that by giving one of the best teams in college basketball history, and they are that regardless of if they win on Monday night or not, the game of their lives, the maybe one of the best college basketball games we've ever seen. A lot of people think it's the best, you know. Maybe, like, that's UCLA was more, I mean, that was a team of destiny thing going on. And it felt like with Michigan getting as far as it did without Livers, that maybe that magic was there, but it wasn't. And it is what it is. There's no shame in what this season was for them. To get out of that first weekend without Isaiah Livers, quite frankly, is impressive. To get to the Elite Eight without him is even more impressive. And just the fact that they looked like a functioning basketball team most of the time without him is incredible in its own right. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. As I'm processing these feelings, you know, 6 days out or whatever it is.
I will say this. Yeah. I mean, it was 100%, like you said, Anthony, a dud offensively, but they seem so locked in on the defensive end. That's the thing that I just don't get. Usually you don't get both or either or, you know. Usually if you're going to go out there and lay a dud, it's going to be on both ends of the court. You know, that was the thing that kind of stuck out to me, is that it wasn't like the Illinois game where they were completely checked out. They were out there ready. That wasn't the same offensive team I've seen all year. They were kind of scared to attack, and they were, like, at times almost trying to, and it was working for a couple possessions, but just force feed the post. It's like they identified that they had a mismatch there, but they just, sometimes you can do the same thing over and over and over, and eventually it's just going to stop kind of working. And I know Hunter Dickinson kind of, you know, lit a fire in the second half there when it was danger time for UCLA. But there were a couple times that, you know, throughout the regular season and earlier times in the tournament, like, Eli Brooks is wide open in the corner and he's going to make that pass. But instead he tried to force it up over three guys. And I get it. You know, you're just rocking. I know I'm nitpicking here, and he made some big baskets and he really lit a fire, but it's those little plays, especially when it's a 2-point game at the end of the game, man, that really make the difference. And they just did things. The point is, they did things that they hadn't done offensively really all year, even when Isaiah Livers went down. That was the weirdest thing to me. That was a completely different offensive team than we saw against Florida State. Completely different.
No argument here. I don't know what happened.
They run out of gas.
I don't
want to talk about it.
Like I said, ran out of gas. I don't want to talk about it. We've been, you know, here on a podcast. We don't want to talk about it. I get it. I totally get it. We can put a bow on it.
Okay. Yeah. So I
don't want to relive this 6 days later.
Right. When you look back at the end, at the season as a whole, what do you look at? Because we've done this particularly with Michigan football, right? Like, think of the revenge tour and how we think about that season. We were having the time of our lives during the revenge tour, but they went out and got spanked by Ohio State. And we do not look back at that year fondly. I think 2016 is the only year we look back as semi fondly, you know. So is this a little bit different? Even though the disappointing end, you look back, They won a Big Ten championship. They were playing better than anyone in the country for a good stretch of the season. I mean, what do you guys think when you're going to look back at this 2021 season?
Over time, I'll come to appreciate it. Some of the most fun I've had watching sports, considering the circumstances with COVID and everything, that the return to normalcy didn't feel legitimate until this team started rolling. It was a lot of fun. It was a genuine surprise. It's not comparable to the 2018 football team because this team actually won something. Like the team in this Big Ten that is comparable to that team is Illinois, where like all the stomping and thumping that they did, trying to win a championship and forge one, you know, make one up out of your own imagination just to get popped. Like the second round Chicago Loyola game was giving up 62 at the Horseshoe, like to a team that can't play offense. I mean, that was brutal. So I know it was a very successful season, but as we've talked about on this podcast many times, expectations constantly change throughout the year. And they played an 11 seed with a chance to go to the Final Four and played their worst offensive game of the season. So there will always be a bittersweet taste in the mouth, but I'll say this, if it was the Beeline era, like let's say that we live in an alternate universe where Beeline was still the coach here, I think the disappointment would be a little bit greater because we may have viewed it as his best chance to win a national championship. With it being year two of the Juwan Howard era, as disappointing as this is, and they should have gotten there, damn it, they should have won that game and they should have played in the Final Four. But I think collectively, other fan bases are pretty scared and our fan base is pretty excited about where they're headed going forward. Cause if you would have asked us on, what was it, June of 2019, where this program would be after 2 years of Juwan Howard, 100% of us would have accepted Big Ten title, Elite Eight by the end of year two. And expectations did change. They reached number two in the country and it was disappointing losing that game, but going forward, I believe in the direction of the program.
Yeah, I echo all that. And I'll say too, like, I've been harping on this for weeks. Don't take for granted getting to the second weekend of the tournament, let alone it took Michigan 20 years after the Fab Five to even get back into a position where they could maybe make some sort of deep tournament run. And now they've gone to six Sweet 16s in the last eight tournaments. They've been to four Elite Eights. They've been to two Final Fours, a couple baskets away from maybe making a third. What this program has done is special. And something that does this mean that they're guaranteed, you know, that there's upward trajectory from here and they're guaranteed to get back? No, it doesn't. But I think that the body of work through two seasons, not just with what the on-court product has developed into, but with what the recruiting has developed into, I believe they will be back in this position. Now, what is this team going to look like next year? I mean, we think we know, but we don't. I mean, it's the Wild West out there with the transfer portal and things like
I mean, do we that. Think we know, though? But,
you know, No. So I totally, we don't. We have no idea because
I would love to get one of them back. I'd love to be able to get at least one of them back and we'll see, but there's some program guys in there, some glue guys who I think just having one of them back could make a big difference next season. Who knows? I think the ones I think we can guarantee are gone for, well, Wagner, I think is definitely gone. Livers I'm 98% sure about, but with that 6 months that he's going to have to recover from that injury does cast that other 2% of doubt. I think Chaundy's gone, but some of the other ones with Davis, Brooks, Mike Smith are going to be welcomed back with open arms. So we'll see what happens here.
We're getting a comment here in the Twitch chat from SSB Jimmy. He asked twice if Zeb is transferring. I've heard nothing about Zeb Jackson transferring. I don't know if I've been out of the loop.
No,
I haven't either.
I haven't heard anything about that. So no,
It could happen if Mike Smith comes back, but I mean, we're looking down the road there.
I'm ready for Zeb Jackson, man. I thought he gave some good minutes early on in the tournament. I think with another year under his belt and in a full off season, I think he could be a real player. He's got a nice looking jump shot, controls the ball well. I'm really looking forward to year two for some of these guys. Terrence Williams potentially taking a big step. I'm also I am really intrigued about Brandon Johns, man. Like, we had pretty much written off Brandon Johns a little bit, you know, midseason, and because he just every time he came in, just wasn't given good minutes. But then Isaiah Livers goes down, and all of a sudden, the tournament, Brandon Johns playing the best basketball we've seen him play in a Michigan uniform, you know. And with him back, he's so versatile. Potentially Dickinson coming back. I don't know. And some of these guys, I was watching, you know, some of these McDonald's All-American recruits that they got coming in, man, they could be scary good if they live up to the expectation in year one, you know, or give anything near what Hunter was able to give in his first year. And these guys were all higher ranked recruits coming in than Hunter Dickinson, man. That's a scary thing to think about. Like, this team should be back. I don't know. Because Juwan said, gave the free rein to the seniors, said every one of them's got an open invitation to come back. I don't know how all that would work. I don't understand how the scholarships are really working with the extra COVID year.
Do you mind if I explain it to you?
Yes, please. I would love that. Actually,
I wrote about this today. MaisonBrew.com. There's a shameless plug for you. So here's how it works with seniors and eligibility. So as of right now, without anyone leaving, this includes Franz, which we assume he's going to go to the NBA. But as of right now, all 13 of their scholarships are accounted for next year. But if any of the seniors decide to return, they do not count against the scholarship limit. The flip side of that, see, we're educating live on the air. The flip side to that is that if you bring in a senior via the transfer portal, they do count against the limit. So, theoretically speaking, all five of Michigan seniors could come back. Do I think that will happen? No. If you want me to make an educated crystal ball guess right now, I think that Eli Brooks, there's a really better than 80% chance he's back.
Wow.
I'm starting to kind of get the sense that Shaundi Brown, and this is, you know, other people have heard this too, I think Shaundi Brown might be back too.
Shit.
Isaiah Livers, again, I think he's probably, you know, his college basketball days are probably done. I'm not sure. Again, the invitation's back to everyone.
Can we get a doctor on here to explain the 6-month recovery time on that thing? Oh my God.
You know, we could do that. I could make that happen, but we'll see what happens there.
A quick little segment, you know, it could just be a little 10-minute explanation or something.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, bringing it back to Zeb Jackson, like, Michigan needs one of those guards to come back, whether it be Mike Smith, Eli Brooks, because then it leaves, like, if they don't, it leaves you with Zeb Jackson, who's a combo guard, can handle the ball, but I think he's more of an off ball type of guy. Kobe Bufkin, kind of the same deal, but more of an off ball too. And then Frankie Collins is a true freshman, and I think he's going to play, but, you know, with freshman point guards, it's like drinking out of the fire hose a little bit. So, if you could get Eli Brooks back, great. If you can get Mike Smith back, great. Again, you know, the guys like Mike Smith and Austin Davis, like, if they come back, that would be their sixth year in college. And, you know, the door is open for them to do that. If it were me personally in that position, which I'm not, because I'm not 7 foot tall and I'm not good at basketball, if I'm not going to the NBA, I'm probably not spending 6 years in college. Unless I had some kind of debilitating injury. I kind of feel like the story's been written on both of those guys. But like I said, I do think there's a really good chance that Brooks will be back, and maybe Shaundi. I'm kind of like 50-50 on Shaundi Brown, but I do think that Eli Brooks might take them up on this fifth year thing, which it kind of changes the trajectory of what that backcourt could be. I mean, we've seen Eli hasn't really played the point a ton in the last 2 years, but we know he can. So just adding another body there would be massive. So
I think, man, Eli might be the most important one out of the potential returners, to be quite honest with you. His ability to shoot the ball, his ability to handle the ball in the backcourt. I mean, you got a lot coming in, obviously, in length and size and everything like that. And I love what Shaundi brings, obviously. It's tremendous. But Eli is – he does so many things, and I know Shaundi's incredible defensively too, but Eli, like Phil Martelli said, man, he was kind of the most valuable player here this year. They were not close to the same team without him in any of the games. And I know it was the same with Isaiah, but I've written him off. Obviously Isaiah coming back would be massive, but you know, between like Eli and Shondy, I'd love to have them all, but if I had to choose, I'd probably take Eli, man, because his ability to shoot outside, handle the ball, and play defense is truly tremendous.
Well, I like the idea of having both of those guys back, because I think
that I love the idea of that.
Yeah.
I think that might just be your starting backcourt. I know that Shondy kind of thrived in that six-man role, but to go like – and it depends on the freshman too. Like, how ready are those guys going to be? I think this is really the first year where we've seen guys come in. I mean, outside of Franz in that first year, you know, Juwan was able to bring in a freshman class that was able to hit the ground running right away. And Caleb Houston, that's a guy who I think is going to slide into the Isaiah Livers role. And I think, you know, a lot of people think he's a lottery pick right out of the box. So that's great. That's fun. Musa Diabate, kind of a stretch five, can play some four, can play some five. Do a little bit of, you know, he's a first round type of guy too. That's where it becomes interesting. Like, and this is kind of pivoting to the next thing though, who could be transfers out? I don't have any inside info on any of that right now, but again, we've talked about this before too. I'm wondering if, given the transfer portal being the tool that it is now, and given that Michigan has Hunter Dickinson and they'll have Houston and Diabate and some of the, you know, Terrence Williams, where does Brandon Johns fit into all this? I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens with him, because at his best, yeah, he could be one of your starting five, but is that role, like, he could go to a lot of schools and be guaranteed that role right now. Is that going to be the case at Michigan? I'm not sure about that. So that's, you know, if you're looking for guys, like, everyone, you know, people automatically point to like the Adrian Nunez's of the world. Oh, that guy could enter the transfer portal, and it could happen. But, now, Brandon Johns could be the one that is like the quote unquote surprise, like maybe David DeJulius was last year.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah. I go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No, I was just saying I would have probably shared that sentiment prior to the tournament, but I think given how he played in the NCAA tournament, I think he may be a little bit more inclined to come back. This will just be the last thing I'll say. I think Hunter Dickinson is going to have a Luka Garza type season next year. I think that there are elements to his game that we didn't get a chance to see this season. Guy is constantly working, constantly hungry, ton of confidence. He's, unless I'm missing somebody, probably going to be preseason player of the year, which is a meaningless award, but I expect he's going to do monster things next season.
People don't realize, like, he showed some stretch five stuff in high school. Like, he can hit threes. He can hit from the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need him to do a ton of that this year. I don't even know if he hit a three this year, to be honest with you. I don't think he did.
No.
He had a couple good-looking elbow jumpers a few times.
Yeah, that's an area of his game I'd love to see improve it. And people, like, I'm not saying people aren't talking about this, but think about what he could do in a full summer with, like, John Sanderson.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot, like, there's still – he's a big guy, but there's still a lot he can do with his frame. You know, I know I'd like to see him be a little more court aware in terms of the fouls away from the basket. I don't know how you rep that and work on that in the off season, but, like I said, I don't know what his pro outlook is, but I just know that he could be, you know, he might have a seal. Like, Luka Garza was a special player, a guy that was national player of the year, all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To reach that, that's a lofty expectation. But do I think he could be a 20-10 guy in this league? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
for sure.
I also, I mean, as soon as he, and I think he will eventually, as soon as he's comfortable going over his left shoulder with his right hand, he's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah.
It's going to be, as soon as he can go both ways on that pivot when he's backing you down instead of turning over the right shoulder every time, it's over, man. And that's a guy, too. You know, we're talking, I know the NCAA is in the Supreme Court and everything like right now, but for the name, image, and likeness, that is a guy who could benefit massively from something like that with all the accolades he's getting. Like you said, Anthony, we don't know the pro outlook on that right away. I mean, as soon as this comes down, he could be one of those 4-year guys that is kind of getting sponsorship deals off of his prominence as a college basketball player.
Apparently I saw this somewhere. Apparently if name, image, likeness was a thing right now, I didn't realize this because I'm not like, I have TikTok because some of the videos are kind of funny, but like apparently Adrian Nunez is like a big TikTok star.
Yeah.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
They said he would be like Michigan's highest earning player, which is
possible.
And awesome. I mean, shout out to him. Go secure the bag however you can.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what I was going to say after that. So I'll just stall until it comes to mind, and it's not coming to mind. So what else we got?
I don't think we got much, man. You know, we talked about because there's so much up in the air. It's fun to think about what the roster could be next year. But with the transfer portal, what it is, we literally just have no idea.
Well, say this, you have teams that have to build literally almost entire rosters because of transfers this year. And I don't think that's going to be the case for Michigan. But it's going to factor in. So we'll see what happens.
Here's the question for you. Could Saadi leave the program, go coach the Chippewas a little bit? I know Dan Marjolais has been a pretty popular pick on Twitter, and I know Saadi was a Western guy, but might trade in those colors for the maroon and gold, you know?
Well, he turned down the Western job last year, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. It might take a significant financial investment from our alma mater, but I'll say this. I'll do it for a lot cheaper. So
yeah. There you go.
My staff is here already. So call me.
Oh man. All right. We got anything else here? We just kind of put a bow on the season, man. I don't know. It felt like a eulogy. I felt like I was going to a funeral today.
No, you know what? I'm feeling the Easter hangover. I'm feeling the Michigan basketball hangover. I'm tired.
Same, man.
I think we've all earned a rest, and at some point, I'm sure we might take a week or two, or you know, we're not going to go AWOL like we did a couple summers ago, but just I'm tired. Yeah. I'm tired. I'm basketballed out. You know, baseball being back has been a nice lift. The weather being good outside of pollen being prevalent has been good, but I'm tired, and I'll be honest, as soon as I jump off this, I'm going to upload it and probably go right to bed. So
check who won in the morning.
Yeah, whatever. All that stuff, right?
Yeah, right. Chris, where can we find you on social media?
Well, I'm back on it at Castellani 2014. That's at Castellani 2014. Back with the post-game Tiger videos. There you'll find the link to my YouTube page as well. But you know where my heart is doing the Tiger stuff. I have another show, Locked On Tigers, which is I post Monday through Friday, recapping the games that were, previewing the upcoming game as well. That's at Locked On Tigers on Twitter. You can find those wherever you find your podcast. Go on Apple Podcasts, go to iTunes, leave a written positive 5-star review of that show. Leave a written positive 5-star review of the Brewcast and the shows here on the Maize and Brew family of networks. So please follow me on all those platforms. I'd much appreciate it. Oh, and I'll throw out my Instagram as well, just because I update stories and, you know, more personal stuff, but that's totally fine. That's Chris Castle 95. So please follow me on all those platforms.
Anthony, where can we find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, Anthony T. Broom. You know where the website is, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Google, or we're on Twitter. My brain is totally fried. Yeah. You know where all the socials are. You've been following us for years. The Maize & Brew account has like 32,000 followers, so you're one of them. And if you're not, become one. I don't know why you would listen to us and not follow us on the socials, but we're there. Social media is not new. It's been around for like 15 years. You know where we're at.
You can find me on Twitter at Luke Ghiardi, LukeGhiardi. Reminder, when we record the shows, we do them live on Twitch. Tonight was it was a bit of a struggle to get this thing rolling, but we ended up here. We got her going. And a big thank you to everyone who has listened to the show, interacted with the show this basketball season. Man, it was so much fun. One of the most fun stretches that I've really had. Twitch has added a lot to that. Everyone, you know, jumping in the chat, having some fun, man. Always good engaging with every one of you that does that. And you can, if you just listened on the podcast, thank you as well, man. It was a real fun stretch. I wish we got to preview a championship game here tonight, but it is what it is, man. I'll look back on this season with some seriously fond memories, and that's a big thanks to the listeners as well. So really appreciate that from all of you out there. And as they said, subscribe, rate, leave a review, hit us up on Twitter and the socials, and we're going to have some fun still with baseball coming up. We're going to have to be talking a whole lot of football and whatnot. That'll be here before you know it. So
we're going to hold on. Let's stop that for a sec. We're going to have to be talking a whole lot of football here soon. I love how you framed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a must. It's not necessarily what we want to do, but it's definitely a must. So for my partners, Anthony Broom and Chris Castellani, I'm Luke Yardy, and we'll see you next week on Brewcast.